There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
G'day and welcome to this episode of Runners Only with Dom Harvey, brought to you by Radix Nutrition and Skin Institute. Coming up, Hannah Wilkinson.
The entire world is going to be watching us. It's the most, one of the most watched events in the world. I think this World Cup will be the biggest. It's actually going to be crazy. People are not ready.
Hannah Wilkinson, or Wilkie as she is known by her teammates, is one of the star players of the New Zealand Football Ferns, a team she has played in since she was a teenager 13 years ago. She's played over 100 games, been to three Olympic Games, played in three, soon to be four FIFA World Cups, and that is just the tip of her football iceberg. This one needs to come with a little bit of a warning. I know nothing about football. So if you're a massive football fan and you're looking for an insightful and knowledgeable sports-focused podcast, this ain't the one. But I would like to think it's a good glimpse into the mind of one of New Zealand's greatest footballers of all time, and hopefully you'll come away with a better idea of who Hannah, the person, is on and off the pitch. Just before we crack into it, a huge thanks to my sponsors of this episode, Skin Institute and Radix Nutrition. Skin Institute are doing some very important work. 6,000 Kiwis are diagnosed with melanoma each year, and 300 of us, could be me and you, die from it. Skin Institute are the skin cancer experts. Go and see them for a full body skin check. Might even be covered by your insurance. If not, it's only going to set you back a couple of hundred bucks, and it'll give you peace of mind. Their website, skininstitute.co.nz, or you can call them on 0800 754 637. 0800 754 637. This episode is also sponsored by my good friends at Radix Nutrition, who, as a matter of fact, have a special deal for you right now, which you should get amongst. They want you to try their breakfasts for free. Just select a couple of flavors you like the sound of, and you will pay for postage and nothing else. Their breakfast range, by the way, is epic. They taste incredible. And each breakfast sachet is packed with seriously high protein, fiber, no added sugar, and over 30 vitamins and minerals. Me personally, I like them as a pre-run fuel because they give me the fuel I need without making me feel bloated or heavy. But they are fantastic for so many other reasons. If you're a hiker or walker, you can chuck one in your pack. They're very, very light and easy to carry around. You could even just keep a couple in your drawer at work for an emergency healthy snack. Save you from the vending machine. Go to their website, radixnutrition.co.nz, and look for free sample pack. Or to make it easier for you, if you go to the description of this podcast episode, I'll include the direct link to make it real simple. But yeah, you should definitely get amongst it. You know, there's that saying, there's no such thing as a free lunch. But when it comes to Radix Nutrition, there definitely is such a thing as a free breakfast. All right, let's get into the episode. Hannah Wilkinson from the Football Ferns on Runners Only with Dom Harvey. Fast pace, slow and steady, anywhere you coming. Just want to connect for everyone who loves running. Hey, Runners Only with Dom Harvey. Runners Only with Dom Harvey and Hannah Wilkinson. Do I call you Wilkie? Do I call you Hannah? What do I?
I feel like Wilkie is probably the domain and reservation of teammates.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Hannah it is.
Yeah.
Striker for the Football Ferns. Yep. And it's a position that you've had through your entire 20s.
Yes, yeah. Started out in the national team 2011, and been going ever since.
Yeah, it's been an incredible career. 31 years of age, mm-hmm. 105 games for New Zealand, 27 goals.
Yeah.
Well, are you not a stat person? Are you?
I don't know.
Are you like, yeah, probably. Probably. I don't know. It's your podcast, mate.
Yeah, I don't know. Yes. I mean, it all sounds correct. So, yeah.
And probably. 100th game for New Zealand at the Olympics.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Really. That's not something you forget.
No.
What happens when you're in the Football Ferns and you have your 100th? I know, like in the All Blacks, very few people have done it, but they get like a cap presentation.
Yeah. Yep. So I got a jersey, my name on it was 100, and a cap, and, you know, had a big sort of celebration with the team. And, yeah, it was just good to, you know, do a little speech and, like, you know, it was really cool and even more special to do it at an Olympic Games. So it was pretty awesome.
Are you emotional at that time? Are you an emotional person with these sort of milestones?
Yeah, I think it gives you some time to reflect, I guess. You know, I don't really keep that very... I didn't actually know it was my 100th until I was told, you know, you might actually get 100 games. And I'm like, oh, no, no way, really. So, but, yeah, it was cool. It was amazing to be able to reflect and just be grateful that I was able to do that with two injuries as well. Major injuries was a pretty awesome thing to be able to achieve.
Yeah, major injuries, knee injuries. We'll get into that. There's so much to the Hannah Wilkinson story to get into, including not just the football, but you just being like ridiculously good at whatever you put your put your mind to. You've got songs on Spotify. You're an accomplished artist with a mural at Eden Park. There's like so many. Psychology student at Harvard as well. But there's just so many feathers to your cap. It's just ridiculous. How can one person get so much talent? It's not fair. Okay, so FIFA World Cup 2023 here in how many World Cups have you been to? Is it two others?
Three others.
Three now. Others. So this is your fourth.
Yep.
So where have the previous three been?
First one was Germany in 2011, and then Canada 2015, and then France 2019.
Right. So what does it mean having it in New Zealand? Because it's where were you when you heard the news? When you heard the news about the announcement, can you remember that moment?
I was actually with a couple of teammates. I was with Flea, Annalie Longo, and Erin Naylor in Auckland because we needed to be down there because it was obviously a big deal and we could actually win the bid to host. And we had no sleep because we had to listen to it live, and it was over in wherever FIFA was announcing it at the time. And, they said it was New Zealand, and I couldn't get over it. I mean, it was just the most amazing news, and we spent that whole no sleep, media all day, and just all of this, all of these possibilities unfolding in our minds, like at Eden Park, like opening match, and now we're here. Amazing.
Was there sort of like a candidate race or anything? Like, was New Zealand on a shortlist or?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. It was between us, Japan, and I can't remember now.
Yeah,
like a couple of other countries, but I think it was Japan pulled out for some reason, and it gave us a really good chance. And we had to obviously co-host with Australia because we wouldn't. We
have the infrastructure.
A country, we would never be able to do that alone. So, it's just incredible.
I'm not really a football person myself, so I do apologise in advance for any dumb questions that might come out. My football knowledge is probably similar to Ted Lasso on episode one, season one. That's about the extent of it. But are we sort of underestimating, as New Zealanders, how big this tournament is? And do you think it's one of those things that we won't realise just the significance of it until it's right here?
Completely.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I think people are going to start to realize how big it is once the first games come and first few games are going to come and go. There's just the entire world is going to be watching us. It's the most, one of the most watched events in the world. I think this World Cup will be the biggest. So it's actually going to be crazy. People are not ready.
I can see, like, your eyes light up when you talk about it.
It's just amazing. I mean, I've been to several, so it's... It's an event unlike anything else.
And this one will be the most special, I guess, because of the proximity to family and...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we are a team that are always, always the away team. We are never at home. You know, we play overseas constantly. I think most of us just barely play in New Zealand, if that. Not even barely any home games. So to bring it home and to actually have a home advantage... And then to play in front of family and friends who helped you get to where you are is amazing. Mm. Absolutely incredible.
And how's New Zealand going to do? Where are you expected to come?
Well, you know, our goal so far is to, make history and get out of the group and obviously go beyond. You know, our group is not too bad. It's one of the better groups we've had in the past. And we can really compete with these teams. And, we're going to really go for it. And we've been preparing for the last couple of months we've all been together in camp and we've been working bloody hard, and it's the longest time we've ever been together. You know, instead of rocking up to a tour with two trainings to figure out how to play together. Yeah, we're playing together for weeks and weeks at a time, and it's been a real privilege, so that's good.
But there's quite a few people in the team in their 30s, am I right?
Yeah, so
it's quite a mature, established team.
Yeah,
like, so I mean that in the respect that people that you've played with before and a lot over the years.
Well, traditionally, we actually had a pretty consistent squad of the same players, and lately, now last kind of few years, actually, the team's kind of gone through a little bit of a change where a whole younger generation has moved through into the squad, and the original sort of key kind of group. It's been a little bit of a process of figuring each other out at this point, like a younger generation and an older sort of generation as well. So that's along with a new coach. Do you have a comment?
Oh, I got it. Hey, my dog, Kanye, for anyone that's listening to this rather than watching the video, he is just like staring at you like sickeningly in love.
I know, he's so cute.
He's obsessed. He's a big football fan.
I know.
He's like, oh my God, I can't believe the striker's here. That's what you are, a striker.
Yes.
Yeah, so that means you get the goals. Mm. We'll go right back. So growing up, you're from Whangarei.
Mm-hmm.
You're from Carmo or just Whangarei?
Just Whangarei, yeah.
Why did I think you're from Carmo?
I went to Carmo High School and I played in Carmo, like, you know, football teams and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm from sort of Kensington, which is more in. I mean, it's not a very big place. You could say I'm from Carmo if you want.
Okay. And you, what other sports did you play? Like, we established early on that you're very good at a number of things, which we'll get into. Were there other sports that you played that you excelled at when you were younger, or?
I played a little bit of rugby, a little bit of like track. I loved sort of sprinting and maybe some cross country surfing. I really enjoyed. But football was the one that kind of really stuck for me. I fell in love with it pretty quickly.
Yeah, because you had two brothers who both played.
Yeah.
So do you think that's what attracted you to football?
Definitely. I wanted to do whatever they did. So, just followed them in, and we were naturally very competitive people. Yeah. So.
Are they both older brothers, or are you the middle?
I'm the middle child. Yeah. So one younger, one older.
Having an older brother, that would help sharpen the pencil, though, I'd imagine, when it comes to sport and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think he lost interest pretty quickly. But my little brother, he carried on and loved it. And then my dad started coaching, and that's when I started to get pretty serious. And, yeah, just kept going from
Amazing.
There.
Amazing. And you even had a photo of Maya Jackman? Who's Maya Jackman?
Oh, yeah. Maya Jackman is a New Zealand football fern. She's a legend of the game.
Is that terrible that I don't know who Maya Jackson is?
It's Jackman. A little bit terrible. I'm going to teach you all about her now.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm real sorry. I feel like I deserve to be educated. So who is Maya Jackman?
Now she was one of the kind of front runners for the football ferns. She's in all the kind of earlier World Cups.
Like, are we talking 80s or 90s?
90s, I believe. Right. And she was a footballer that I looked up to quite a lot growing up. Like, I had my poster of her on my wall. And,
okay.
I kind of managed to join the team kind of right as she was leaving, I think. And,
So your paths crossed.
Yeah, slightly, I think. I do remember some trainings with her.
That's got to be the most surreal pinch myself moment. So you're in the same team as this lady who you had on your wall as a poster. Where did you get the poster from, by the way? Where would you get a poster of Maya Jackman?
Oh, I mean, that was the kind of female football icon growing up.
Right.
There weren't many because, you know, growing up I was only kind of looking up at, you know, male players because there wasn't much women's football at all.
Yeah.
So Maya was quite a key sort of figure. Obviously, the more serious that women's football became in New Zealand, the more visibility we got, the more we got to know and look up to all of those past football ferns.
Yeah.
And then, thankfully, I ended up playing with a lot of them, which was incredible and such an honour.
Yeah, do you fangirl? Do you manage to keep it pretty chill?
I mean, I think I came in there kind of just with such a desire to. All I wanted to do when I started to get really serious with football was to represent my country. And so, yeah, all of these girls that I was looking up to and watching on TV, I was starting to get to play alongside them, and that was amazing. And to be not just play alongside them, but to be guided by them and coached by them was just it's the. I mean, it's that sort of guidance has led me to become the player I am now.
Yeah, so when you made the team, you were like 17 years old, right? 17 or just turned 18 maybe?
I think when I made that senior team.
Yeah, the football fans.
I was, yes, 17.
So how old was Maya then? Same age as what you are now, like early 30s?
Must be. Right? Yeah. I don't know. I think so.
That's a huge age gap, isn't it?
Like, I don't know if she's that old. No.
No, but I mean, do you feel it now? Like when, say, a 17 or 18-year-old comes into the team, like from where you are now, like in your 30s?
Oh, yeah, I know.
They're doing the TikTok dances. Are you like, oh, I'm too old for this shit?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, you start to see that, and that's what we're experiencing at the moment as a squad and has been for the last few years, is the converging of the younger generation with the kind of veterans that we're in for so long. I mean, we're seeing Millie Clegg now as the 17-year-old coming in, and I'm like, wow, you are so young, but you can see, like, you know, the future. Mm. And it's exciting because she's a fantastic player.
Yeah. Mm. So growing up in Whangarei, playing football in the, I'm guessing, the 90s, early 2000s, was there a girls team?
No.
No?
No way. I played with boys until I was about 16.
So you played in a boys team, or was it, like, called a mixed team?
And were there other... called it a mixed team. It was usually just me, but I had a couple of other girls.
Okay.
Maybe one or two others.
Because I've had Sophie Devine on the podcast. You know Sophie Devine?
Yeah.
Yeah. And is she a bit older than you? Maybe she's mid to late 30s. I don't know.
I feel like, I'm not sure.
But she talked about that, how, same situation as you, played with brothers growing up.
Yeah.
Lots of fights. Brother chased her with a stump one day. And then there were no girls teams. So she just had to play in the boys team. And she had a story on the podcast about how usually the other boys were okay, but it was some of the parents were like quite weird about it.
And that's some interesting.
Vision she's got. You didn't sort of encounter any of that, anything like that from either?
Not necessarily. I mean, nothing that I knew of, you know. I think if anything, it would be my parents at the fear of, like, you can't play with boys, like, it's going to be too rough. But in fact, you know, it meant that you could compete a little bit harder and push yourself that little bit more. So I'm actually really grateful I got to play with boys. And I think a lot of Ferns that had similar upbringings would say the same.
Mm. Did they have a rule in Whangarei? I know some parts of the country had this rule where if you're a girl and you're playing in a boys' team and you scored, you got 2 points instead of one.
I heard about that.
They didn't have that in Whangarei?
No.
Shit, that would have been dangerous with you
on the
team.
It would have been, actually. It would have taken real advantage of that.
In some ways, like reflecting and looking back now, do you think, like playing with boys the same age or even a bit older than you, it sort of made you stronger, made you tougher, made you
Absolutely.
More competitive?
It certainly made me more competitive, I think. And it also kind of teaches you a lot about you shouldn't underestimate yourself, regardless of your gender. You should be trying to push yourself to be the best. And I didn't care if it was up against like a 6 foot tall fella. Like, I was just right, you know. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you moved to Auckland at 17. You came here to study, and everything must have happened really quick.
Yeah, it did. I think that was one thing that was tough for me at the time, is kind of breaking into teams or having... I did try to make the under-17 Women's World Cup that was here. I worked hard to make that team. And I did travel down kind of every week for a trial sort of squad, but never actually made the squad. And that was a moment where I was just so devastated, you know?
Good. Yes. I'm pleased to hear there's been a little bit of adversity in your life.
Of course there has been. You can't get success without failure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so that was a moment that was really, like, crushing for me, obviously. You know, young kid wanting all these dreams and not getting picked. That's, you know, always hard.
How does that happen that you miss out on the under-17 New Zealand team and then the next year or even the same year you're playing for the national?
Well, I think I had I grew about 3 foot taller, which helped. I got a little bit, you know, stronger. I got a bit fitter. I think technically I got a little bit better. I got a little bit smarter with the game. Moved to Auckland as well, so I was under the noses of the coaches more often, and I think that's how it kind of happened for me.
So since then, it probably doesn't feel like this for you, but from an outsider's perspective, when you read the Wikipedia page, it looks like the last 13, 14 years has just been like a crazy whirlwind. Like, you're in Tennessee for 5 years, then you're in Sweden, and you're in Portugal, and you're in Australia, and meanwhile, you're playing for the New Zealand national side this whole time. Mm-hmm. From an outsider's perspective, it looks like it's been a hell of a life.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's what's great about football is it's a global sport and it's the biggest, most popular sport in the world. And it's everywhere. It's all over the world. It would take you to some incredible places. And it, you know, meant that I could go and play in the States and, you know, paid for my education. And just the amount of opportunities that I've got through football are just phenomenal. And I'm just so excited that, you know, Australia and New Zealand are going to see the global game. It's just not common. Football is just not that popular here at all.
No, it's way down in the the sporting ranking. Eh? Yeah. Does it bother you when people here call it soccer? And I suppose being spending so much time in America, you're sort of used to it.
That's what I mean. Because in America, it's soccer. And but I think, it is football. Like, that's the traditional sort of, that was the
English. Yeah, and it makes no sense that rugby should be called football. It should be like handball. Or
Well, even living in Australia now, because football's now, it's AFL over there. And I'm like, no. You know, it can get confusing. Yeah. But, yeah, football is definitely the right word for it.
Yeah. Sure. So you moved to Tennessee 17, 18?
I actually went when I was 20, yeah.
Oh, so you're in Auckland for a couple of years.
I was in Auckland studying for a while.
And okay, then, psychology?
Yeah. And then just decided to go over there, continue my study. And I heard a lot of really good things about college and kind of looked around or, you know, sent kind of a playing resume out to like some, you know, I don't know, it was some system that worked.
Went to some scouts.
Pretty much. Yeah. And, met with a lot of different teams. I actually committed to Maryland because I really liked the coach. His name's Brian Penske. And I was about to go to Maryland, but he told me at the end of my recruitment year that he was moving to Tennessee. And he was like, do you want to just like have a look at the school? Because I liked him a lot as a coach. And I loved Tennessee. It was awesome. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, what did you love about it?
I loved that it was only a women's team there. And women's sport at the University of Tennessee is traditionally really big. So the I don't know if you've heard of the Lady Vols basketball. It's a huge program where they had a very famous women's coach that took them to just several championships, and they were just extremely successful. So the emphasis on women's sport and women's success and women's athletics there was massive, and I love that. And they also had a lot of international athletes, which I also really, really loved. The facilities were fantastic. So it was just amazing. It was an amazing place.
What about homesickness? You're a long way from Whangarei.
Yeah, I was really homesick when I first went there. Like, first 6 months, I was a wreck.
So where were you staying? Were you, like, in a dorm or a hall or a flat or what?
I started off in some dorms, sort of student apartments kind of, and then, eventually moved into kind of off-campus living. And it was just awesome, mate.
Like, was it?
It really was. Once I got over the homesick, I loved it. And I fell in love with country music, and it was just such a cool experience. Seriously, any like kid in New Zealand, especially like women's footballers that want to be successful, go to college. I'm telling you, it's the best thing for you. You will end up, you know, getting your education paid for most of the time if you're a good player. And you know, you have an incredible experience, and it's a really good stepping stone into professional.
Did it feel like you'd walked into like the scene of like 10 Things I Hate About You? Or, you know, was there like sororities and frat houses and beer pong, the red cups?
It was
really?
Like a movie. It was.
Actually?
It was, yeah.
And were you in a house, or is that what they call it? A house?
Yeah, I did end up like living in a house with a bunch of teammates.
And, no, a house like a sorority house.
Oh,
or,
like actually.
Yeah.
Well, those are more, you kind of get, aren't they like kind of generationally sorted out? Like that's like a, if you have like,
oh, your
my
parents
family
had to be, oh,
was
really?
This, so my dad was this in this okay, fraternity, so then I'm going to
so
go.
So Wilkie from Whangarei, no, you're not allowed in the land.
I mean, those, you kind of, if you had parties, then you'd rock up to one of those. But I didn't particularly enjoy those, really. I mean, I think they were just, like, it was just too much, eh? Like,
yeah, what's the drinking like over there? Because New Zealand gets a very bad rap, and I think rightfully so for like our drinking culture here. What was it like over there in terms of binge drinking and stuff like that?
Oh, it's right up there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they're no better than us.
Well, it was funny because I went over when I was 20,
mm-hmm.
you know, and over there the legal drinking age is 21. So I'm going out with my mates in the weekends, because in the spring sessions you train all week and then you get the weekends off. And the weekends are when you, like, go for it, you know. And, yeah, I went out with my mates, 20 years old, and was wondering, like, why is the guy at the door put these huge X's on my hands? So you've got X's on your hands because it means you can't drink, because you're under 20. And so I learned a little thing called bathroom beers. This is probably the worst thing to be talking about right before a World Cup, but this is a long time ago.
No, this is great. Yeah, enough time's passed. Since then you've played like a zillion games for the football. You're good.
Those days are certainly over.
Oh, so you go to the bathroom and just like scrub off the...
Well, no, you take your beers into the bathroom and you drink them in there.
Oh, okay. What, so you have to go in there and like just like scull it back?
Bathroom beers, yeah, if you're under 21.
So you go in there. So how you go to the bathroom drinking, like every half hour or so with a beer, and
you just go, yeah, with your mates. You're over, so you hang out in there, 21 mates, and they bring it in. Yeah, sorry, that was terribly explained. But yeah, just for clarification, I do not do this anymore.
Oh no, I love that. Yeah, what is your relationship with alcohol like now?
No, don't really.
Non-existent.
No, well, I mean, we have to keep on top of everything. So
yeah, but would you have like a wine at dinner or no? Not at all.
Occasionally.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So in Tennessee, you get a... Do you graduate? You get a BA in psychology?
Yep, I get a... I actually graduated with BA in psych, but because I tore my ACL towards the end of my undergrad year, what you get given... Basically, when you go to college, you get 5 years... to complete four, like five seasons to complete four. And if you get hurt, you've got an extra season. It's called your red shirt season. And I use my red shirt season to study like a post-grad course because I've finished my degree. So I ended up, you know, injuring myself but becoming more qualified as a result, which I thought was awesome.
What drew you to psychology? And has it been helpful for like the mental side of your game?
I actually really wanted to be a physio. But I wanted to be a professional footballer too, or play for New Zealand, so that was just not an option. I didn't have the time to put in the hours. So I just kind of leaned towards a more theory-based practice, and that was psychology. And then I ended up really enjoying it over time, studying a lot of different branches of it, and just kind of kept going with that. And it has been helpful.
Has it, in terms of yourself internally, or reading other players, or dealing with other players, or has it been helpful?
I think mostly coping with anxiety, like performance anxiety and pressure, because like that just keeps ramping up. The more successful you become, it can become unbearable, you know. So when you have the strategies to go back to kind of the start and figure out why you started playing in the first place and what you find extremely enjoyable about what you do, it actually is really helpful when you can have that sort of grounding, mindful. Those sort of strategies are helpful, and learning about those over time. When I was injured, it was particularly helpful as well.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, that must have been tough. So you've had like two fairly significant knee injuries in your career. Mm-hmm. So the first one was at Tennessee that you.
Yes.
So what was that, like an ACL thing?
Both of them are ACL.
Right. On the same leg?
Yeah, it's both of the way. I mean, this is an extremely common injury. You actually won't see most of some of the best players in the world at this World Cup because of these injuries, like this ACL injury. It's happening all the time in women's football and women's sport as well. And the way I did it, I mean, it was just the classic. When someone says, like, I blew out my knee, it's exactly what I did. So just sprinting at a defender, stopping on the leg to change direction, and it's just explodes almost. Terrible injury.
So straight away you know that?
Oh, yes. It feels horrible. It's basically you just dislocate the joint, and it tears the main ligament that holds it all together.
And then I suppose there's a period where you sort of hope for the best but expect the worst, and then you get a scan or a ultrasound or whatever.
Yeah.
And then what are they – fuck, how's that?
Yeah, look, doing it for the first time, it was, you know, you kind of know but just want to be optimistic, but there's a pretty awful test that the physios do when they basically test if your joint's still together, and you can kind of feel it when they're testing. So it's, yeah, it's not pretty. Mm. And so that first one was just, it was really tough. But I was so grateful to be at college under that support. It was just amazing because they just had the best facilities and they had the most incredible
rehab facilities, you mean?
Yeah. And I mean, they're taking care of football, like I'm talking American football, college players that, I mean, they see this injury time and time again, so they know exactly, like, by the book what to do.
But mentally, that must be I'm probably projecting here in a way. Look, I'm not playing for the national team. I'm just a guy that likes to run. But the last, like, year or so, I've been, like, coming back from a osteoarthritis situation. Yeah. And I had a couple of physios that said, if it hurts when I run, the solution is just not to run. So I've got a little bit of cartilage there, but not much. So I've been rehabbing hard. But it's, again, I'm just a guy that likes to run because mentally it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
But fuck, it's been tough.
Yeah, it is
It's been really tough.
Yeah.
You know, this thing that you love. And it's like, for you, it's part of your identity at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially when I did it again on the second leg, and that's when I was a little bit wiser, a little bit older, and learned from the first one. And then with my background in psychology, I was very motivated to learn about the physiology of the injury, why it takes so long, what the surgery does when it, you know, the main problem is where periods of inactivity just atrophy your muscles, and that's the problem. You have to build back muscle. And then it's just this ongoing period of tedious exercise after tedious exercise until, you know, you're eventually starting to walk normally, and then you're eventually being able to jog, but it's just so slow. So the way that you have to, like, focus on it is, like, not days at a time but weeks at a time, because then you focus on the weeks, you see that you are moving forward in the right direction. So simple things like that where you actually have to reframe a lot were really helpful. And honestly, there's just so much advice out there because people have done it. So many people have done it. The best people, the best players. Rapinoe's done it, I think, 3 times. So she inspired me a lot when I was going through these. And now look at her. She's at her, I don't know, 5th World Cup?
Yeah. But how do you control, how do you control, like, the negative thoughts and stuff? Because I'm thinking, so for me, I just want to get running again, and that's it. For you, I mean, you've got to think, shit, if I'm not back in time, there's going to be some 17, 18-year-old that comes in, and, you know, like, emotionally and mentally, how the fuck do you deal with that? So you're trying to get yourself better, but in the meantime, someone else could be coming and taking your spot.
I guess that comes down to, like, just really focusing on what you can control. Because if you are fixating on things you can't control, it's just not going to help you at all. So you just have to go back to what you can control for yourself. And that's what I did with my second one. I just was like, I'm going to go for this, and I'm going to do everything I can to get back. And it worked. It did. Yeah, it was hard. So hard, you know. And these knee injuries, I mean, like, you're never the same after, but you figure out ways to prevent it and ways to keep you strong so that you can be the best version of yourself at the time.
Are you nervous for 50-year-old Hannah?
Oh, yes, I'm terrified, actually. You talking about your osteoarthritis, and I'm going to start a cycling career, I think. Certainly no more running for me.
So some nights I'll get out of bed at 2 in the morning to go for a wee, and it's like, feels like I've played, like, 100 games for the All Blacks or something. Okay, so then, from Tennessee, so where do you end up after that? You end up in Sweden? No, Portugal.
I went to Sweden as my first professional contract. And that was an interesting experience.
What, like, do you mean?
Well, first of all, we the internationals that go to this, like clubs in Sweden, I mean, this is probably different now, and I hope it is, because there's more and more investment in the women's game. But when I went in there, I ended up living with a Canadian international, but we stayed in this, it was a basement, but it was being rented out. It was a basement apartment. It was rented out by one of the manager's work friends. So
this is really, really weird.
It's actually so bizarre if you think about it. And that was fine and good and whatever. Like, it's just, it was such a small town.
Yeah.
And the management just kind of worked with people that really supported the women's game. So it's actually quite cool what they did. And they had facility or places for players, internationals, to come and live. And it was just a really easy way to help us, like, have somewhere. But the basement, it was a little bit, like, my stuff got really moldy because it was just really damp. I mean, we're Sweden, you know? So that was a bummer. But it was an adventure, you know? Like, it's the first time professional in a very small town in the south of Sweden. And it was a great club, awesome people. I improved significantly.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just pushed. If you want to just really improve at football, you got to go to these leagues. These leagues will push you. And
yeah, and I suppose because you didn't really want to go home to your basement, you spent extra long at training.
Exactly, yeah, as long as we could, right? It wasn't that bad, yeah, I will say. It really wasn't that bad, but it's just funny. You'll hear a lot of funny stories like that from women's players. And I think from, like, I would argue, like, maybe a lot of women's athletes all over the world, because sport for women is not really set up in the way... Or traditionally, it's not really set up in the way it is for men.
You're not treated as well as the men. Is
yeah,
that kind
exactly.
Of, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Most of the time, I think some
has
clubs...
Has it got better? You must have seen, like, seismic improvements in your
massive.
15 years. Yeah.
I mean, I've gone from that to, like, I went and played in Portugal at Sporting, where Ronaldo played, and yeah. It's the academy, and we're, like, all as a collective, men's and women's training in the same sort of kind of facilities and living, like, close to Lisbon, and, like, you're treated like a real professional, along with Melbourne City, where I'm at now. It's the same thing.
Mm.
So, yeah, it has.
Did you have seen Ronaldo in real life?
No, I never saw him, but I did see Bruno... What's his name? Damn. Plays for Manchester United.
I don't know. You're asking the Ted Lasso guy here.
I know, you're right.
All I know about Ronaldo is I would change sexuality for him. Would you?
Oh, I don't know. He's good.
I feel like he'd be, maybe love himself a bit too much. I don't know.
I think so, mate.
What about the Olympics? Did you fangirl over anyone at the Olympics? Do you see anyone?
The Olympics. I saw... In 2012, we met Neymar. You have to know who Neymar is. You'll go and Google him later then if you don't know. And another guy that you won't know. But that was the biggest.
Who's the other guy that I won't know? Because of, I don't know, people that are into football that listen to this.
One of the other Brazilians. Because we were Brazil Pele. Played. No. God, no. Far out. I'm not that old.
Who else is no, I don't know. I'm running.
No, Google Neymar though. He was okay. I mean, man, he's fantastic.
All I know is Messi, Ronaldo and Beckham, and Rooney.
Yeah, I haven't met any of those guys, sorry.
Because I had Marcus Daniel on the pod. Do you know Marcus Daniel? He's a tennis player. He got a bronze medal at the last games for doubles. And I asked him that same question, and he said they saw the Williams sisters and Usain Bolt at the food court one day, and they were just like, they ended up, like, taking their food away and going and eating in private because they were just, like, swarmed. So you got all these people there that are the best of the best in the world, and then you've got these people that everyone knows. And they're just there trying to do the same gig.
Exactly. Yeah,
they can't get any privacy. Oh, God. All right, I'm going to have to look up. Who am I looking up when
Neymar.
I... Neymar.
Write his name down. N-E-Y-M-A-R. Everybody listening is going to be like, dude, really?
You're a loser. What an embarrassment.
Watch him play too, because he's fantastic.
Yeah. And then, so you go from Sweden to Portugal?
From Sweden, that's actually where I did my second ACL. And
when was this? This was reasonably recent, hey?
It was 2018. 2018, I tore it. Yep. 2019, I came back from it. And then... Yeah, I went to Portugal kind of after the World Cup in France, and that was great. It was awesome. I loved it. It improved my touch. I have never really been a very technical player, so that to improve that part of my game was really important.
What does that mean? Can you explain that?
So that's like...
Because by this stage, you'd already played like say, 50 games for New Zealand or something. Yeah. Like, you're an experienced.
Yeah. And so I'm the kind of forward that kind of is athletic, sort of running in behind, fast, strong, winning balls in the air. It's quite a raw way of playing. Whereas if you're, say, like a midfielder, or you're a striker that comes down to get the ball at your feet, that means that you're kind of a more technical player and you're able to take really good touches on the ball and dribble past people. And that part of my game, I obviously was improving over time, but going to Portugal, it really helped. I played basically among the Portuguese national team. So we actually played them recently and I just met up with all of them and it was fantastic.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. What are they? Is it Spanish they speak there?
Portuguese.
Oh, Portuguese. Yeah. Did you know any? Did you learn any?
I learned. This is the cool thing about football. All you do is you learn the
moves
on the football field. So yeah, if it's right in Swedish, it's like höger. If it's left, it's vänster. And then it's like, if there's pressure in Portuguese, it's cuidado. You got to be careful. So you learn all of that.
Just the key words for the game.
Exactly. And then, you know, the internationals. Because everywhere you kind of play, you'll have internationals, and English is kind of the base language. Mm. And you would have like another coach telling you what the coach is saying, and just translating it, you know.
That's got to be so difficult. Is it quite a lonely experience?
It can be, but football is so international. So it's like, it's not hard to, not understand something in football because it really is so universal. It's a universal game, you know. So everybody tends to understand what's going on when it comes to games. But the communication back and forth with the coach sometimes is what's difficult.
So you got your phone out and you're recording it and then putting it through a translator app?
I've done that so many times.
Actually?
Yes, absolutely. Anything to get a point across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a game that stands out as the best game of your career? I know you've had a game where you scored like 5 goals. You scored all the goals. Who was that for and against? Was that for New Zealand?
That was actually for Melbourne City.
Right.
So that was just...
So that's where you're at now. You're playing... Melbourne now?
Melbourne City, yeah, now. Yeah. So the season before last was a Boxing Day match against Melbourne Victory. So that's why that was so awesome, because Victory are our arch enemies. And we beat them 5. I think it was 5. Did they score? Can't remember if they scored or not. But regardless, it was just the most satisfying game ever.
And you score 5 goals. Obviously, it's a team effort, but did you... Putting modesty aside, like, can you look back now and go, you played out of your fucking skin?
Yeah. Look, I think I was good to be in the right positions. I was in the positions where I needed to be as a forward. And my team did the rest. As a forward, all you are there to do is to put the ball away. And if you're in the right position to do so and you do it, you've done your job. Because your team relies on you to do that. They ball the ball up to put it on a platter for you to finish, and that's the ideal sort of way that football works.
And then would you say, like, objectively, their goalie had a bad game, or?
I think there were a couple of goals where, yes, the keeper really messed up, and also one of their defenders really messed up as well. So that, if you're a forward that can anticipate mistakes like that, that's a good thing. So it's always key to, like, look out for those kind of mistakes from the other team. But, yeah, she did have a bit of a mare that game.
God, who would want to be a keeper, eh? That's got to be the tough. Have you ever been on a team where the keepers had an absolute shocker? And how do you deal with that afterwards? Like, it's got to be the hardest thing if you know you're stuffed up. Like, you'd carry the weight of the – I don't know.
Of course. I think when you're in a team sport, no matter what happens, you all take ownership of that result. You know what I mean? So if I'm scoring 5 goals, for example, that's not my win. That's our win because we did it, you know. And if we lose 5-0, that's our loss. That's not the keeper.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the keeper's fault for conceding 5 goals. It's all of us. We all, like, take responsibility for those results.
Mm. Is life going to be boring for you when you retire? Like, your 20s have been insane, right? Insane. You've been playing for New Zealand the entire time. You've been in Tennessee. You've been in Portugal. You've been in Sweden, living in a basement, albeit. You've been in Australia. So from my perspective, it's like this is a party that you wouldn't want to end. But then I'm guessing from your perspective, maybe you're like, I just want to, you know, get my roots and settle down somewhere.
Yeah, you nailed it, honestly. My 20s were filled with a lot of moving around, and that's hard. You know, I found it hard doing it And a lot of the time, my moving was done. It wasn't really my choice because of my injuries. Most of the time was why I had to keep finding new contracts. And then just, you know, post injury, even during COVID, I think I was coming off. Yeah, it was after the Portugal gig that I had, and COVID hit, and a lot of women's teams just lost so much money. And I was like, shoot, I got to find a club. And I ended up going and playing in Germany, which was a tough stint. That was a tough one.
Oh, I overlooked Germany. Whereabouts in Germany?
Duisburg.
Right. Why was
I don't recommend you go there.
Why? Why was that tough?
Tough coach. Yeah. Very intensive training. I mean, Germany's kind of well known for this. The Bundesliga is a really good league. So I loved it, pushing myself in that respect. It was awesome. But our team, yeah, we weren't that good. So we were getting beaten a lot. And our coach was just a maniac, to put it lightly.
What was it, just the German traits that everyone speaks of, or just an absolute maniac?
I'm telling you, if you don't pass it right, or you don't control the ball properly, you're running. You know, like old school, like no emotions allowed, just straight out. Like, oh, I mean, it was hell. We had a period of time where it's just snowed for 2 weeks straight, and we just did 2 hour gym circuits in a tiny gym about the size of this room for like 2.5 hours. Like, I was like, and then many funny stories from that.
What was the purpose? Like, to build like resilience, mental toughness?
Absolutely. There had to be. And then we, what happened was we got locked down. And in Germany, if you left your house, we had a positive case in our team. And we got put on lockdown, so we were only doing Zoom workouts. Also awful.
Oh.
But then we if you left your isolation period, because we had to be stuck inside for 2 weeks, if you left that and you were caught by the German authorities leaving your home, it was like a 15,000 euro fine or something. It was, yeah. So, but the coach, he comes over and he goes, "Now what you're going to do is you guys are going to run, but go at night so they don't get you." And I was like, dude, I'm not doing that. I'm not, what, are you going to pay my fine? Like, hell no. But he was dead serious. He was like, "You have to go and run at night." I was like, "No, thanks."
That's amazing. Character building, though, eh? Yeah, how good. Good stories.
Oh, insane stories.
How much longer have you got in the game? There's the World Cup coming up, and then there's the Olympics next year. But do you feel like you're still sort of peaking as a player, or do you feel like you're over the apex and on the way?
Yeah, look, honestly, after my second injury, I was like, man, I don't know how much more I've got in me, honestly. And playing for Melbourne City, my first season there, I actually had a rejuvenated sort of energy for the game, because I performed really well. I had one of my best seasons, and that really kind of motivated me a lot. And I thought, how awesome, like, going to be heading into a home World Cup in this form and hopefully carrying it on. And obviously, you know, I did think about taking a break after this World Cup from at least club football as well. But I thought, like, why would I do that when I put so much work into it? Yeah. And I would be peaking for this World Cup. So looking to sign with City again this coming season.
Yeah.
And then beyond, I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully Olympics maybe. But
yeah. Is there much money in women's football?
Like, it's only getting bigger and better. Yeah. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say go and play women's football because, like, you get paid millions. Like, that's certainly not the case.
No.
But it's definitely improving significantly. Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about the psychology papers and stuff, and I mean, you're incredibly smart and intelligent, so your 20s could have been spent like building up a career and basically doing anything you fucking wanted. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So you wouldn't want to get to the end of your career and be like 35 or 37 and going, exactly. Well, fuck, I've got absolutely nothing to show for it.
Which is actually a massive anxiety for most athletes and most friends, you know, that who are professional athletes, is like, how the hell are we supposed to retire and then be unqualified for basically everything? You know, it's a really common thing. And you know, that's why players' associations are so important.
Yeah.
Because they help give you a lot of life advice. They help you with scholarships to study if you haven't done so, and work experience, coaching licenses. You know, the thought of, you know, unfortunately, your career can only last as long as your body can, you know. Mm. So, and for the, I think for women's footballers in particular, that's really important because we're not left with millions to save later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think grafting your career while playing is something that's highlighted everywhere, and it's really important that people do that.
Yeah. What will you do afterwards? Psychology, do you think? That'd be the obvious one, right?
Definitely leaning towards that, for this for sure.
Mm. What about sports psychology?
Yeah, I mean,
you could stay in the football fields that way.
I think if anything, I would like to, you know, investigate more, go more scientific a little bit, maybe more neuropsychology. Also with psychology of sports injuries, I find that fascinating just because of the strategies I kind of applied, I found really, really worked for me. And so I would like to kind of obviously study that further and get a little
bit
better.
What do you mean? What were some of those strategies?
Oh, I mean, I managed to sort of understand a little bit more about the mechanism of the injury and understanding what the problem is, mm-hmm. kind of naming it to taming it kind of thing. So you understand what's happening.
That.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Like, you understand what's happened or what's happening to your injury, and then once you learn more about the physiological side of it and you have a theoretical understanding of it, you actually can apply a lot with your mind to those rehab exercises that you have to do. So, for example, when you're learning to run again or retraining your knee so that it doesn't swing in dangerously, because what you're wanting to do is protect that joint at all costs. Mm. So when you're doing a movement, actually thinking about the movement to energize those connections, those proprioceptive connections. So that kind of aspect I found really, really worked. Yeah. And I think it's really underestimated. So I would like to, like, obviously learn a little bit more about it and then also teach people about it too.
I don't know how you've managed to find time for everything, eh? So there's the study, there's all the playing that we've talked about, the various like countries that you've lived in, but then all, you follow you on Instagram, there's the extracurricular stuff as well. Like you're a mad artist as well. Like you've done a you've done a mural at Eden Park to celebrate the three women's World Cups, cricket, rugby, and now football. And you design tattoos for people. You got any ink on yourself that you've designed?
Yeah, no. I do. I have one here.
What's that?
It's like a koru and a Māori sort of kirituhi that I kind of came up with, and a rose, and there's a lily there, and just a cool design I really wanted somewhere. Mm. There's definitely more that I want. You know, don't tell my mum, though.
you design tattoos for other people, right? So people can contact you.
I used
you.
To do that,
Oh, you don't do that anymore?
I did that for a long time. I've done some of my teammates' ones, which I think is so cool to see.
That is. That's the highest honour, I think, hey?
I think a lot of what I do is I want to do things because I want to always see if I can do it. I like to challenge myself. So with the mural, for example, I've always wanted to do the art that big and have opportunities to do that. And Nick Sortner, the CEO, kindly said, yes, go for it. And, man, that was just such an incredible challenge. And I just like to push myself in those aspects. And I always like to, just see how much better I can get at something.
Do you ever have self-doubt with these things? Or?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
How do you get over that?
A human condition, yeah. Freaking out for a little bit and then just adapting and then coming up with ways to solve things. Like, for example, with the Eden Park mural, the space I did it on was almost like road seal. So it was a terrible surface, lots of unanticipated things like that. And then the paint I used, I would have usually used like a street art paint that dries quick, but the paint they gave me, which I'm thankful they did that, was Dulux. It was like furniture paint, and it just dripped down the second you sprayed it. So I had to do some problem solving. I freaked out for a while, but then I came up with
a solution.
Where I use more stenciling and some masking tape kind of ways to keep the lines kind, and then obviously some paint, obviously help, just normal paintbrush. So,
yeah. Well, your art's really good. Like, there could be money in that post-football if you chose to go that way. You could be like the next Phlox.
Yeah. The next what, sorry?
Phlox.
What's that?
Oh, okay. I'm taking a point back for the Neymar.
Neymar.
Phlox. On the other side of this wall, there's a Phlox. I'm going to show you afterwards.
Okay, great.
She does
great,
like birds.
Great. Cool. Okay.
Yeah, she's really, oh, unbelievable.
Man.
Wilkie doesn't know Phlox. Unbelievable.
All right, okay. It's a tie.
What about your surfing? You get out surfing or do you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you get told off by like any administration in your team for surfing or anything like that? Like as an injury risk or?
So, in fact, in your clubs, like usually when you sign with a club team, they'll have a little detail in your contract that you're not allowed to do certain things. Like you can't ski or you're not allowed to snowboard or like. But clubs, I mean, so far what I've signed is there's been no detail of that. I mean, it says briefly something like you're not allowed to be reckless, engage in reckless activities.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Most of the time you probably could get away with it. But
do you go all right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
what size board?
I usually had a short board, like slightly taller than me. I haven't been so long though. I mean, it's hard. Like with this career, it is. You do sacrifice a lot when you're a professional athlete. It's an amazing career, and it's just obviously living the dream. But you do sacrifice a lot
of
things like that.
Yeah.
So, I haven't been for ages.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
I'm so jealous. I've had a board for like the last 10 years. It's very big. It's like it's probably borderline stand-up paddleboard length, and I still can't get up on it. It's huge. It's massive.
That's a nightmare to toss around the surf.
And so what about the music? You've got some songs on Spotify. Your music's really good. I really like it.
Yeah, man. I actually went through a period there where, I mean, I've been playing guitar for a very long time.
Since like a kid or?
Yeah, since I was about 12. My dad played, so he taught me. And my little brother, like, played a bit of bass. My older brother plays guitar. So anything we kind of did was fostered within the family, which was cool.
Yeah, so that would have been, I mean, I think it's never been easier to learn to play something like a guitar than what it is now with YouTube tutorials and stuff. And they have the fingering in slow motion and everything like that.
Yeah.
So did your dad manage to teach you okay? Like, you're pretty good.
Yeah, well, he bought me my first guitar, but then I actually had about a year of lessons. I've always been a kid that wants to get, I'm very stubborn in that I want to get good at something. I just sat and I did it until I was, because I just was like that.
We're quite different. I'm a quitter. Two lessons, nah, I'm done. Wow, so you just want to improve.
I think there was anything creative I really enjoyed and I thought, man, that sounds amazing or that looks so cool. I have to learn how to do it and I just did it until I did it.
Mm.
And, that first year of lessons, I had an amazing guitar teacher at school and he made everything very easy. So I recommend if you're starting an instrument, like go actually get lessons because then it forces you to go. A lot of the reason people don't kind of continue with an instrument is because they just don't do it enough. You have to keep doing it. So that sort of persistence is needed.
And then how long did it take to get the confidence to like play in front of another person, like a non-family? You know what I mean?
It took
like
me a while.
Yeah.
And I know, yeah.
So I feel like a lot of people that learn an instrument must have that, eh? Like that's got to be quite a terrifying thing it's a very vulnerable moment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like you must feel very exposed. So can you remember that moment?
I do. I think, any time I've gone on a tour with New Zealand, I'd bring my guitar and we always have like a sing or something like that.
if you bring a guitar on tour, there's going to be an expectation that you have
course,
to play it to others.
Of course, but I kind of brought it because, it calms me down. Just
so you just wanted to like practice as a distraction thing in your room.
But then with like some of my friends and we'd just mess around, playing even in front of them was like, you all automatically sound terrible when you say when you're nervous. Yeah, it's awful. So that's always like a tough part to get over. But it's a good way to practice confidence, and trusting yourself and your self-esteem and stuff like that.
Yeah, I suppose especially if you get the validation back.
Yeah.
That you probably deserve. Well, so what were you doing? Just like Ed Sheeran covers, Fleetwood Mac covers? No, what?
Yeah, it would be something like that. One of those.
Yeah, so how do you make the leap from learning to play the guitar, doing covers, to writing your own songs and then putting them on Spotify.
So when I was in Sweden, the thing is, you know, when we were playing professionally, you train for about 2 hours, and then you've got the rest of the day, you know, during the week, especially if it's like, you know, you're leading up for a game, you have to be ready for a game. So those rest hours I really took advantage of. And I got pretty serious with my music because I thought it would be a place where I would end up. I would have thought, you know, I could do this, you know. I really believed that I could end up doing that. And so that's where I put a lot of time and energy into writing music. I had a lot of songs already that I'd just written over the years and decided to record a couple. And, yeah, just chuck them on and just wanted to see how they did. And, yeah, I've been playing, like, a little bit of live gigs here and there, like, those few years. I haven't done it for a while, honestly. Mm. It's kind of an avenue that I thought I would actually really go for it. But during the process, I actually got really frustrated. It's something about turning a passion into a profession that kind of ruins it. Because I had to sing the same damn song over and over again. I can't hear the song anymore. It drives me nuts.
Oh, like when you're recording it?
When you're recording it.
Yeah.
Because it's not right. That doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound right. Over and over and over. Ugh.
Yeah, because your most popular song on Spotify, it's called Waiting for the Sun.
Yeah,
it's a good
one.
And it's, yeah, lyrically it's really intense. It's a song about waiting for a relationship, like a right the sun is a.
I think so. It's something like that. It was.
What do you mean you think so?
I can't. It was so long ago. I'm so old. Dumb.
Right, right. I'll grow up. You're 30 fucking one. You can never sit down in front of a 50 okay, year old and say
fair.
You're old.
I will say that's fair. You were just talking about osteoarthritis before. So.
No, but I listened to it a few times on repeat on my run today, and I'm not normally a lyric person, but I mean.
Yeah,
so.
I think it was about like a part or going through a really tough relationship and then finding someone that was finally like I've waited for the sun and it's happened for me kind of thing because most of my music, I mean, like most artists and most people write when they feel the most and like, you know, relationships are those, like we really have those heightened feelings and
yeah.
Obviously it isn't, well, that was a huge outlet for me. There's a lot of songs I've written about my football and failures, my injuries I've written about. I've got so many songs that I just haven't I certainly haven't recorded them, but they're definitely somewhere.
How do you, from someone that's got zero musical experience or talent or ability at all, like how do you turn a song about like football failure into a song? Like what are some of the lyrics of that one?
I think it was just like pretty broad terms, like yeah. being patient and kind of not being a victim in it, and
yeah.
controlling what you can, and there's a lot of metaphors you can use, and you know what I mean. Yeah. Like you can start to get really artistic with it that way.
Yeah,
but honestly,
you say you can start to get artistic that way, but I think you're just that way sort of
inclined.
Wired.
Yeah, definitely. I think overall, all of that really helped just my mental health. And also just helped my performance and calming down on the pitch as an athlete as well and helped me figure myself out a lot as well. And,
yeah.
Because you know, living away from home is awful. You know, it's hard because I do love my country and I love being home. Like now it's being close, living in Australia is a dream.
Yeah.
So like when you are living abroad and then you're injured and you can't play or like you're not getting picked to start and you're just like, why the hell did I move this far? You know?
Yeah.
So all of that, it just helped. So much.
And has you mentioned your it's good for your mental health. Has your mental health been mostly good? Like apart from the periods where you've got like knee injuries and other you know, highs and lows or lows rather that come along with being a professional sports person, it's been mostly good over
yes,
the years?
Absolutely. Yeah. But awesome. Honestly, it has been being a professional athlete, like because you're so defined like that.
Yeah, you are.
I think one way for me to kind of not get so bogged down and being defined as a professional athlete when you're injured, you're suddenly not that. My music or my creative side really helped me in that respect because it's like, okay, football doesn't actually define me. It's not the single most thing that defines who I am. I'm also a creative person and I can still do that.
Yeah, you can relax. There's probably other people that need to worry about being defined by it, but you've got plenty of feathers in your cap. You're good.
There is actually like quite a like wide community of athletes that do have creative sides, though.
Is there?
Yeah. I have a couple of Melbourne City teammates that are photographers. I got some of them there are graphic designers. The Olympic, the IOC, they have like an athlete artist program.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I met a javelin thrower from England, Great Britain, who like I kind of connect with, and he does these amazing paintings. He's an insane painter.
Wow.
So there is actually like quite a community out there. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. So cool.
And the person that Waiting for the Sun is about, do you play them the song? Like, is there a particular person that knows that song is about them?
Yeah, I think back then, like, the person I was dating at the time did know that, and that was pretty special.
So do you play it to them on, like, on a USB or a computer, or you play it to them live? Can you remember
I don't think they would want to, like, listen to it ever again because I played it so often. Just, like, on radio, okay?
I just hit myself at the end with my microphone. It's one of those moments that I suppose very few people will get to experience in their life where someone writes a song about you. So I'm just wondering what that moment's like and what your recollections are of that moment or experience.
Yeah, I think that was, like, pretty special, I think. But I think... So, I think it was highly appreciated at the time, and I think I've done that a lot of the time with, like, partners I've had, and, like, just, like, you would maybe write a love letter or, like, take them on a nice date or just any way to show appreciation. Like, that would be one of my ways of doing that.
Do you wait till you get to, like, the three-month mark? Do you have to do 3 months before you get a Hannah song?
Yeah. No, I mean, at the time, I think, yeah, it was something that I did frequently, but... Yeah.
Taylor Swift of
just
you.
Just like, I know, right? Like, I think any artist or any musician would say the same. It's just like, it's a way to feel, so, yeah. Mm.
Are you seeing anyone right now?
Yes, my partner lives in Queensland, her name's Katie.
How long have you guys been together?
We've been together over 2 years now.
Right, is she the one, I listened to a podcast on my run today in preparation of this, this may have been going back, where, this was an American girl, you're on the same team.
That was my last relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long, so you and Katie have been together how long? 2 years?
Just over 2 years. Yeah. Now,
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So does she play football as well?
No, she is not remotely associated with football, which is like, I think is very helpful.
Like, me and her could have a good conversation.
Yeah,
probably.
I think so. I think you guys
does she know who Myanmar is? Or?
She actually does. She would now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
She would now. Yes.
Yeah.
But no, she's fantastic. She actually was... She grew up, like, dancing. She's a dancer.
What song has she got? Did you... Has she got a song yet?
Like I said, I haven't done that in so long, so...
So you've been really... I don't want to say defined, but you've been really open about your sexuality, and you're involved in a couple of charities that, you know, support, like, gay rights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool. What was that journey like? Like the coming out journey? When did you realize you were gay?
When I was probably 18.
Yeah.
And just kind of was in denial for a couple of years, and then kind of told some teammates of mine. I went out to a gay bar with a few of them because that was kind of like they were just going out there for fun, and then.
Where was this in Auckland?
This was in Auckland, I said to one of them, it was, you know, that kind of stuff weighs quite heavily on you, you know, when you can't really talk about who you're seeing and your new partner and you're really excited and it's fresh and it's new, but you feel like you can't
talk
about it. So I went up to one of my teammates and I said, like, I have to tell you something. And I could tell already when I say that, like, she already knows what I'm going to say. And she goes, like, oh, yeah, what's that? And I said, well, let's just say it's not... It's not entirely unreasonable for me to be in this place was my way of coming out. Like, it was just so hard to say at the time, you know, so much, you're such a minority position at that point. So
sucks that you have to build it up to be such a big thing, eh?
I know. So that was a very terrifying experience, like anyone who's been through it. And, I will say, like, looking back, like, it really, if I was to give anyone any advice, it's never going to be as bad as you think, ever. You know, I talked to my best friend on the team about it, and every reaction was perfect. It was like, is that it? Like, what do you mean? Like, why are you so nervous and shaky and crying? And it's like, that's great. Like, finally,
Were you that, like, stressed about it?
I was terrified, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think now...
Why? Is that just overthinking and almost catastrophizing?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're thinking, like, that you're going to be disowned. I mean, you know, that's unfortunately the case for a lot of, like, kids or young young adults sort of coming to terms with themselves, and that's why it's important that we have like a lot of visibility of, especially if you've got a platform to show and celebrate your identity as much as you can, and show, you know, that you're not, you know, it's not something to be chastised over. Mm. It's not something to be, you know, despite what you might actually think. It's, yeah, I think it's disappointing when you've got kids who are suicidal because they're just so ashamed of their identity.
Oh, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
It's completely outrageous. And it, but it also seems outrageous. I mean, I'm a middle-aged white male, so I can't have an opinion on anything like this. But it seems outrageous to me that it's still a thing that you have to make that announcement. Like, you know what I mean? I never have to stand up in a room and say, hey, I want everyone to know I'm
heterosexual. This is
when Ronaldo walks in.
Yeah, totally. I think, yeah, that is an interesting way to put it. But
I feel like in your lifetime, and hopefully in my lifetime, that'll change, and it's just an announcement won't have to be
absolutely.
Made.
Absolutely. But I think the sort of the point of pride and celebrating identity and respecting and feeling really great about who you are, and that's the part of the coming out process is being able to... The more that's seen and noticed, the more comfortable that people who are on the brink of suicide, you know, feel about themselves, and there's no hate for themselves. There's no self-hatred, and despite what you've been conditioned into, for example.
Yeah, completely.
So, yeah.
And your parents and brothers, they were handy with it?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they do that thing that... I had Campbell Johnston sitting in the same seat as you, the first...
Oh, yeah, like,
first
gay
All Black... And he was like, his mum was like, yeah, I knew already. And then his dad was just mumbling about something that was happening in the duck pond on the farm, like just like zero interest in it at all. Yeah. Same sort of experience for you?
Absolutely. I think like anywhere, I had absolutely catastrophized it, like you said, and I thought it was going to go such a different way. And everybody who loves me, you know, still loves me, and, you know, doesn't make a difference. And that's all that you want. And I think, honestly, if anybody goes through this and then they lose people as a result, that shows that you don't actually need them in your life.
Yeah, fuck them.
Right.
Yeah. It's a good chance for these people to expose themselves.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, good.
Totally.
Have you experienced any homophobia or anything like that?
Well,
you've been aware of it? Because you're in Tennessee. Is Tennessee part of the Bible Belt?
The Bible Belt, yeah,
right,
it is.
Right. So it's, deeply conservative.
To be honest, thankfully, not... Well, you do get the odd, like, you know, derogatory term thrown at you when you're, like, maybe holding your partner's hand on the street, down in Tennessee, for sure. I mean, I had, you know, black friends in America that couldn't go to some parts of Tennessee still. So it was still a place that is just so archaic and just conservative and ridiculous. So, yeah, I've had my fair share. But in the football world, no. Not too bad at all, so I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, I've taken up heaps of your time. I should probably let you... we're recording this in late June, so the tournament's about a month away at the time of recording this. What's the next month going to look like?
Yeah, so we go into camp. Selection is tomorrow. So, well, we get told tomorrow, and then it's publicly announced on Friday.
Selection as in, so you're in the squad.
We've got a wider squad. Yeah. And the 23, squad of 23 will be named internally tomorrow, and then publicly on Friday. So from there, there's a friendly game against Vietnam in Napier, and then we go into base into Keith Hay Park, and then start getting geared up, really. We have another a friendly against Italy. I think it's a closed match, though. So we've got two, like, kind of warm-up games and then go straight into it.
Mm. And how many – what's the story with tickets? How many tickets do you get for each game?
So, yeah, we get, like, about six each.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who's got them? Mum, Dad, your two brothers?
My brothers are actually in England, so I don't think they
can. Oh, how good. How good. Freeze up two more tickets.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, no, I got all my family. I got friends coming and, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Cool. That's cool. And so a good tournament for you, it's going to look like for Hannah Wilkinson personally, a good tournament, what's it going to look like?
Yeah, look, I'm so stoked. Honestly, it's obviously something that I've been gearing up for, and this is definitely the pinnacle event. It's the pinnacle event for a lot of us. So we are really going to go and just go out there and smash it, eh? Mm. It's going to be incredible.
God, I can just see like this fire in your eye when you, yeah. when you talk about it. You like you really light up. Shit, you're going to miss it, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, like whenever that time comes, hopefully get to end on your own terms rather than with an injury or something. Yeah, but
totally.
Yeah. How hard is that going to be? Like,
yeah, look, I've thought about that a lot because I have actually been close to just being like, I can't anymore, you know, with injuries and like how knees feel and the sacrifice. But yeah, in the end, it's your life's work, you know. So, and yeah, just at least this tournament is extremely important, and it's an amazing group, and we're going to be incredible.
Yeah. Well, and as we've discussed, you say it's your life work, but this is just one chapter of the many chapters that you're going to have in your life. I've got no doubt about that. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see what you choose to do next, because it seems like whatever you do bloody well.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks, Wilkie. Oh,
no worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hannah Wilkinson on Runners Only with Dom Harvey. Thank you so much for making it all the way through. I do hope you liked that episode. If you've ever got any feedback, good or bad, you can message me on Instagram, domharveynz, love your DMs, or you can email me, domharveynz@gmail.com. Just before we go, very important acknowledgement to the sponsors of this episode. Without these organisations, the podcast simply wouldn't be possible. So last thing I want is for you guys to buy something or try something you don't want or you don't need. But if you are in the market, I would encourage you to support the people that support the podcast. First of all, Skin Institute, who do some fantastic work. 6,000 Kiwis are diagnosed with melanoma every year. 300 of us, maybe me, maybe you, will die from it. Skin Institute are the skin cancer experts. Go and see them for a full body skin check. Skininstitute.co.nz, or you can call them 0800 754 637. 0800 754 637. And finally, Radix Nutrition, who actually have a special deal for you right now, which you should get amongst. They want you to try their breakfast for free. It's real easy. Just select a couple of flavors you like the sound of, and you will pay for postage and not a cent else. Their breakfast range is incredible, by the way. They taste good, and each breakfast is packed with seriously high protein, fiber, no added sugar, and over 30 vitamins and minerals. Personally, I like them as a pre-run fuel because they give me the fuel I need without making me feel bloated or heavy. But they're also great for hikes and walks. You could even just have one in your drawer at work for an emergency snack. Go to their website, radixnutrition.co.nz, that's spelled R-A-D-I-X, and look for free sample pack. Or to make it even easier for you, in the description of this particular episode, I'll include a direct link. All right, I think that concludes this episode. Really hope you enjoyed it, and I do hope to see you next week on Runners Only with Dom Harvey.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.